In 2018 and 2019, St. John's Lutheran Church of Northfield is conducting oral histories of its members. My name is Judy Carlson, and today we'll be interviewing St. John's members, Joan and Vern Kester, longtime members of the congregation. Welcome, Joan and Vern. I'm looking forward to hearing your St. John's story. So let's start out by one of you or both of you telling a little bit about how you happen to be members of St. John's, how you were attracted to St. John's, or when did you become members?
Yes. I became a member because I was baptized here. I think I was actually, I officially a member in December, I think I was December of 1946. So that's how I got connected with St. John's. I've been, obviously a member here my whole life. And that's the reason you're here, Joan, right? Because I was here.
Mm-hmm. Vern and I got married in 1976, and I had been raised Catholic and left the Catholic Church during my college years and had never gotten connected in another way with the church. And so when Vern and I got married, we actually got married in a Catholic church at my alma mater, College of St. Catherine. And I tried to reconnect with that church then, and it just wasn't a good fit for me. So shortly after we got married and I moved to Northfield, I thought, well, let's explore the Lutheran church. And so I came to services at St. John's, and it felt like coming home. And there were enough similarities in the service to the Catholic Mass that I felt like that was familiar. But yet, so many of the issues that I didn't agree with of the Catholic Church were non-issues here, like birth control, for instance, and women being ministers or priests. And so I've been very happily churched here since, for the past 40 years.
Okay, well, that's a great story. And you've been here for many
years. I mean, grew up there, went through, you know, all the Sunday school. I can remember a couple of Sunday school several. I always felt that this was another, a good home, you know. I mean, I never felt like, oh, I have to be here because I was born into it or whatever, you know. So it was always, St. John's has always had a warm spot in my heart, I guess.
Were you about to mention a couple of Sunday school teachers?
Yes.
And let's expand that to other people, for both of you, who have influenced you as you have been worshiping here those 40 years.
Well, I mean, just people like that. Noteworthy things that come to mind was for some reason I also remember Mrs. Stein. Now this is terrible that I don't remember her first name, but I grew up in an era when it was like she was Mrs. Jewel Stein, and that was fairly common to be known as a Mrs. somebody. But she was such a dedicated Sunday school teacher in like second, third grade. I just remember her going through all the Bible stories and all the felt board things that were involved and all that. That was really cool. Another teacher that I, you know, still know to this day that I just thought, boy, was pretty incredible, was Dwayne Olson. He's a physics professor at St. Olaf. And I remember specifically one day he took us up to St. Olaf to look at the laser that he had set up. That was kind of a new deal, a laser. But what I remember about Dwayne is like he was in such, his calling was, his vocational calling really fit him. He was a great teacher. He could take a concept and just lay it out so clearly. And there's so many names that are a lot of connected with St. Olaf too. One person I remember very clearly aware of that when, incident I remember was at, it must have been an annual meeting even, which I'm not sure what age I was, but Sam Haugen came to that meeting and said, because there was a house on this block that was for sale, and he was just adamant that St. John's, we will come up with a money to buy this house because you know, this church will need to expand. And so he's the one in my mind that is the reason that we have room to expand here at St. John's. Because there used to be, I think we've moved off four or five houses at least, to the point where there's just one other house on this block that, that St. John's built on. And I credit that to him giving a very impassioned statement. Like, I thought, whoa, this guy is motivated. You know?
And really could see into the future.
Yes, yeah.
And seemed to have a way of gathering the folks, the flock, to follow his lead and his vision.
Yes, because I mean, it all comes down to, you know, do we have the funds and this and that? And to him, he was just way motivated. Says, you know, this isn't important enough. Mm-hmm. We need to find the money to do that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's...
You've seen quite a few pastors here.
Oh, boy. Yes. Starts with Boral Bjorn and Bob Bergeson. And I don't think I can remember all of the ones, but yeah, we've had him. We've had, Jacobs, Pastor Jacobson, and of course Les Svensson, and you know, of course, yeah, Pastor Crippen, and we have wonderful pastors now. Stuff you remember. If you ever shook Pastor Bjorn's hand, that's one thing you remember. He had such a big soft hand and such a welcoming handshake. Wonderful. And he was, he and Bergeson would have been my confirmation pastors and stuff. It was, they were great. I mean, we've always had wonderful pastors. The preaching here has always been, you know, great. I mean, the things are, you don't get the simplistic interpretation of things. You know, there's always a twist. Maybe that isn't the right word, twist, but
deeper level.
There's a deeper level. Yes, mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of times when I hear the preaching, you know, you come away like, oh, okay, yeah, now I get that aspect of it. So, been good that way. So, different. Dick Shetler is another pastor I remember because there weren't that many, maybe that many farmers in the church at that time when he was here. But, you know, he just singled me out because I was a farmer and he wanted to get to know the farmers a little bit more. So.
And then he and Leif Connect started what is now Connect's Nursery, and they started by renting some of our land to start growing trees.
Yep. So it was, Leif and Dick's Trees, he called it to begin with.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, yeah.
Leif has never forgotten it.
Oh, yeah. He's indebted.
Well, he thinks so, but we were glad to help him out. He started out in a year that was really drought-stricken, and so they were hauling water out to keep these poor saplings alive all summer long.
Yeah.
And Dick Shetler was a partner of his. Mm-hmm. That's way back in my memory.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, just watch so many people grow up over the years. You know, I mean, you just see them in church and see all the transition. Mm-hmm. It's probably a good way to keep reminded of our mortality, you know, a little bit, you know, because there's so many good people that you just, you know, watched walking up the aisle for communion and all that stuff, but it transitions. And so you come back, you think, well, no, wait a minute, this person's no longer here. He's no longer here. Mm-hmm. And it's just a good reminder of the path that we are on. that's a blessing that I have because I've been in this place, one place, for so long.
Mm-hmm. It continues to feel like home.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Anything you'd like to add about people you remember?
Well, I was thinking about this, and two women who came to my mind are Carolyn Jennings and Christine Carlson.
Oh.
And I got to know them well during the years that I was a young mother and, you know, figuring out all the parenting stuff. But then beyond that, taking a look at feminist issues and how I was going to raise my children and the kinds of influences I wanted them to have in their lives. And knowing that the church was going to be one of the influences in their lives, I felt that there were some changes that we could actually look at making this congregation more gender neutral and more welcoming in a broader sense. And so one of the things that came to my awareness because of having grown up in the Catholic Church, I made my first confession and my first communion when I was 7 years old. And that was considered, quote, the age of reason. You know, that's when a child, you know, can start understanding things at a little bit deeper level. And at that time at St. John's, you didn't start taking communion until you were confirmed. And that just seemed like a huge gap to me. And why do we want to have all of these years of these children growing up from age of seven, even earlier, until they were confirmed, that they never get to receive communion? And so I had worked with the support of those two women to communicate with the people who were on the boards there and to try and initiate some conversation about it. And Pastor Svensson was the senior minister at that time. Unfortunately, he was supportive of the idea after we, you know, kind of said, you know, raised the questions. And so that was one change that was implemented. And then another thing that came up that was kind of, I was asked to do some exploration on was baptism and how that could be made a more meaningful experience. And so I turned to Christine Carlson, who was Pastor Wee's wife, if you remember. And I said, what do you think we could do to make, you know, a baptism more welcoming and more you know, more impactful? And right away she came up with the idea of having a congregational sponsor who would be there during the baptism and would have a connection, an actual personal connection that, you know, would start with the baptism but then continue on in a meaningful way. And so that was quickly implemented and still happens today. And so that felt good to, you know, start making a few of those kinds of changes and feel like there were other women in the congregation who were able to help with that process.
And you experienced some really amazing listening when you came with your ideas.
Yes, very much so. Another issue that came up that Carolyn was very supportive about was the issue of how we referred to God in a gender, and that it was always a male gender.
Yeah.
And I have been working with a friend who was a member of Bethel Church who really kind of educated me about the importance of God language and not always saying God as a he. And again, you know, raising young children and what did I want to convey to them and what kind of concepts to instill in them. I didn't want either of my kids, but especially my daughter, to grow up thinking, well, God is a man. And I thought it was a good idea for all of us to think beyond the God, he concept.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolyn was very supportive in that process of communicating with the pastors and with the board members. It must have been the worship and arts people who were particularly involved in that. So that was a process, and it was good and an ultimately rewarding one. And every time I hear Pastor Jonathan say God, 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 God instead of God, he, I think, darn, it's still working. In fact, this friend of mine, Chris Kessner was her name, she and I did a forum one Sunday morning called The Motherhood of God.
Oh.
And so that was a way of kind of opening up to the congregation to get them to start thinking about, well, how do we think of God? And is it just a big man with a long white beard? Or how can we think beyond that simple concept and think more in terms of the essence of God rather than whether it's a male?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit more about that forum? How did people receive the concept? What kinds of questions did they have?
I wish I could remember more detail about that. I know that it was taped, so there's probably a dusty archive of it somewhere. And I think I had a tape of it too, but who knows what became of that. So that might be something I might have to delve into finding and
again,
seeing if there's
how
a record
ago
of that.
Was that.
It would have been in the late 80s, probably about 85 or 86, maybe 87. Because I remember my kids were very young, but in school.
You were an early feminist.
I was, yeah.
And are still.
Yeah.
That's a topic that I think would be wonderful to continue to work on.
Yeah.
I'll work on that with you.
Thanks,
yeah.
Judy.
Yeah.
Very nice.
There's a lot of places where you could use, a lot of times, because of this, I think of when it says he, I think creator instead of others. You can just think, like, what language could you insert there?
Yes.
You know,
helping people insert different words, because if it's so much a part of our language that we use the word he instead.
Mm-hmm.
So God or God the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some major impacts on the way things are here.
Well, it felt good at the time to make those changes, and it is a satisfying feeling now to know that those changes are still in place.
Mm-hmm. Well, to talk a little bit more if you will, about other leadership or service roles you've had at St. John's.
For me, I got asked to be on two building committees.
Oh.
And I was, that was right up my alley, I guess. I mean, I really enjoyed that. I have always been the physical plant here at St. John's is also very important to me. You know, I know there's we should be, anything earthly is transient, and that's not what is really important. But I think we need a place to gather, and it needs to be comfortable. It needs to be well-maintained. I think that's very important. So when I was on the building committees, I was also felt very honored to do that. And first one, I can't exactly remember when that was and what we were doing. I think that's when we placed some carpet in the sanctuary. Maybe that's when we took some pews out and I can't quite remember exactly which one that was on, but the second one was like in 2001 when we built St. John's Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a lot of work on that and had some great people working with on that. That felt really good to be a part of that. So very proud that that was a time when there was a conscious, we had to explore, do we really keep St. John's here or do we go buy some acreage? And that gives us more room, and is this building so far gone, we should, you know, need so much that we need better off with something new. And that, there was some serious thought into doing that, which is appropriate. But I was so glad that we finally concluded, like, no, we have to keep this here. I mean, I have always been one that says, you know, take care of what you have first. We got that when our kids, like, you know, toys, you know, like, you take care of your toys. You put them away at night. You're not going to get new ones, you know. Take care of what you got. So when we did that, and then being able to be part of that when we built St. John's, the St. John's Hall, there was a garage that we had a bunch of stuff stored in that we had to find room for this and that, and so much of that. Working with Steve Edmonds, who is a wonderful architect, we were really lucky. Some of the work he's done as far as working with existing buildings and respecting the architecture that you already have. So that was kind of a highlight for me, and it worked. That was really good timing for me too, because I just kind of retired from, quit farming and went on to a new career, and I had a lot of flexibility in my time. So, I mean, I spent a lot of time down here doing various things on that project. So,
Gordy Mickelson last week talked about being involved in St. John's Hall creation, Gordy Mickelson.
So. Yeah, and that's where I got to go a little closer with him. He was, yeah, we were on the building committee together. And, you know, being a contractor, he was just a great asset. Gordy actually has done a lot of remodeling or some outside work on our house. It was actually for my mom and dad, because I live at the same house that I grew up in. Oh. So not only have I stayed in St. John's, I've stayed in the same house.
And with the same wife. Yes.
So, you know, as he's done that. So, yeah, he was a tremendous asset at that.
Yeah. Great teamwork, it sounds like.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Not only sharing your skills, but the mission and the soul part of really affection for St. John's. Mm-hmm. And willingness to give time using your skills and your expertise professionally.
Yeah, yeah, that was, that's a big plus. Like I said, I've always liked to be involved in the physical plant here. That's when our sesquicentennial here, I just said, yes, I just thought, because so often it's easier to get people to donate to someone that's something new, a little sexier or whatever. And the sesquicentennial was basically taking care, you know, the funds, physical funds, were like taking care of what we have, you know, doing the tuck pointing, doing, catching up on deferred maintenance and that kind of stuff. So I thought, yes, that's what we have to do every once in a while.
Did you help develop some of the goals for the sesquicentennial?
No, I was not involved in that at all. Just like when it came out, I just thought, yeah, I'm going to jump on that.
Supportive, certainly.
Definitely. So that was good. Other little things, you know, always made me feel good. Like, you know, one time we thought, should we get rid of these stained glass windows on the sides? And so that was kind of a vote, I think, even. And we voted to keep it. And I thought, yeah, that's good. I like the permanence, I guess. Things like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now you're beginning your third stint on the
property grounds. Again,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
So that's kind of nice. So that's why I go around, snoop around. They're like, oh, okay, now this is right. This is okay. The banner loft is here. Yeah, this is, you know.
Okay.
I'm a kind of anal retentive. You know, I like to have things organized and fixed up. So, yeah.
Joan?
Well, I've been on a couple of boards in the past when our kids were probably about middle school age. I was on the youth board and chaired that for a couple of years, and I was on the worship and arts board a few years ago. My biggest commitment though has probably been the bell choir. Mm-hmm. I wasn't one of the original ones. We still have one or two people playing who were original when the bell choir started about 20 some years ago. But I've been playing now for 17 or 18 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just love it. It's really just very fulfilling for me. I love the sound of the bells. I always enjoyed when they played at church and thought, you know, when my kids got a little older, I'd join the choir. But then I got intrigued with the bell choir, so I'm a ringer rather than a singer.
Had you had any experience before?
Well, I played piano pretty much my whole life, so I knew how to read music. It was just, you know, a different instrument. But, you know, when you play piano, you're playing certain keys at a time, and when you ring bells, you have certain notes that you are responsible for. So I played four different bells, and so then, you know, it's just a matter of knowing timing and... there's a lot of different techniques to the bells too, which has been fun to learn about. This morning you heard what we call singing bells, and that's when we actually hold the bell with the open part of the bell is facing up, and then we have a wooden dowel about that big around, and we run it around the outside edge of the top of the bell, and it makes this high-pitched, yeah, it's almost an eerie sound, but it's very celestial too.
Oh, did you play this morning?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been today.
Yeah, so you'll hear it. It's the communion piece that we're playing.
Oh.
And then, so there's just different techniques that you can do. Yeah, there's many things besides just ringing the bell. You know, you can hit it down on the mat, or you can pluck it. And then we have the chimes too, which are these square metal things of different lengths, and they're the clappers on the outside, and that has a little bit more of a metallic sound to it.
Oh.
So that's we used those this morning too.
Talk about a forum. How interesting it would be to share with people how all that works.
Yeah.
Who knew? I mean, this seems like to me what is going on up there, but there it's much more than that.
Yeah. It's a fascinating instrument.
17 years. Mm-hmm. Have you seen different directors of the film?
Yeah, Jo Dahlin was the original director. She's the one who put it together in the first place,
mm-hmm.
and was the one who, you know, trained me in when I decided to join. And it was just a few years ago that she retired, and then Zach Peltier took over.
I recognize that name. I didn't know that about Jo.
Yeah. Oh, she was so dedicated. And
the Bill Choir, I mean.
Interesting. Yeah.
Wonderful person.
Yeah, and Zach's really great too. He's a music teacher, so he really knows the, you know, the technical stuff that make us more than good. You know, they can bring out more of the musicality in the pieces.
Like running the melody.
Well, the dynamics, you know, when you play loud and soft, and which notes need to be louder than other notes, things like that.
Oh, wonderful. I can't wait to hear it. We'll be worshiping shortly here. Leadership roles. Anything more in that?
Well, you were a Sunday school teacher for
several years. Oh, yeah, I tried that. It's probably not quite my cup of tea, but I thought I should try that, and I'm glad I did. Actually, I was like, I wasn't team teaching. It was like we split. It was
Christy Warmager.
Well, Christy Warmager, and wasn't it? Jennifer Edwards, I believe. So we each took a different Sunday, you know, whatever, for teaching first grade. I think it was for a year, and it was a challenge for me. I enjoyed it, but I said, okay, I think I'll hang that up. It's not quite what I cup of tea, but yeah, that was.
What grade did you teach?
First grade, I believe it was.
Oh.
Yeah. First or second. I think it was first grade.
Luckily, our congregation, I think we're asked to do things that that are a good match for us, mm-hmm. or at least there's acceptance for saying, I'm not really going to want to do that, but I'd love to do da-da-da. Mm-hmm. So,
But, you know, we need to challenge ourselves too, so I was really glad I did that.
Have you been involved in Welka? And
no, I have not, although I did go to the luncheon in January and thought that was a really great experience. It led me into being part of the book discussions that we're doing right now on racial issues.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Waking Up White and White Fragility are the two books that we've been reading here at St. John's for the past several weeks, and those have been some really good book discussions. And not only has it helped us broaden our appreciation of what the issues are, and they're huge. I mean, it's a very complicated problem, racial segregation and racial...
How do those book discussions come? Do you meet in small groups?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some of them meet at different times. Like there's one we're discussing now. It's about gangs in LA, and so there's one group that meets on Sundays between services, and then there's another group of us who meet Wednesdays before the Lenten soup supper and service.
Oh.
So it's a nice way to get to know some of the members of the congregation on a little bit more personal level, too.
And really have a wonderful or a broadening experience in understanding of the issues, the current issues of today.
Yeah. And tying it in on a really personal level, you know, when you have a small group like that with people that you feel you can trust, you know, it gets you out of the purely intellectual and gets you down into... you know, looking at what your own experiences have been and feeling like it's safe to share things that you might not talk about otherwise.
Yeah. Well, here's a question that I think I'm curious about. What are your thoughts about how St. John's has changed over the years?
Yeah, I thought about that. Well, what is different? One thing is that has changed is the population a little bit. You know, if you look at the population in the pews on Sunday, it's definitely thinned out. Because when I was a kid, there was, you had to get there early if you wanted to get to see. But but it's still a very active, vibrant church. So, I think that's what I feel good about. But another thing I thought about, it was this kind of evolved is our the children's sermon. You know, that was a concept that started, we started a long time ago, and it's always been, a really good program. But when we first started, it's like the kids would be, you had to really coax the kids, and it seemed like they walked up reluctantly, they're told you got to walk up there. Where it's evolved now, where they ask the kids to come forward, and they just kind of like,
run.
By and large,
yeah,
just run up there.
Skipping towards the altar, yes.
And I thought, what a wonderful thing. We're teaching our kids that, just don't be afraid to get up. It's just common to get up in front of adults and stuff and walk up there. I think that has got to be a really positive influence in our kids. It's a change. Maybe it's a small thing, but it's a change.
Yeah. I really appreciate that we've become more inclusive. And I think the process that we went through when we were looking at, how we should respond to the needs of our gay friends and neighbors, and can we welcome them here open-heartedly or, with conditions. And the process, the decision makers allowed the congregation to go through a process. I think it was over a year's time that evolved. But there were a lot of opportunities to discuss and to listen to various speakers and to really explore that issue and feel a degree of comfort grow out of that. That we could then, it's in our bulletin every week now that we're
welcoming
community. Yes. And I think that is... I think that is so good. It's a win-win. It's good for the church, and it's good for the people who can finally feel welcome here.
Right. That is a change, but, otherwise, it's. I think it's just a carrying on a tradition at St. John's. St. John's has always been, there's always conflict a little bit in the congregation, I'm sure, but we've always been more at the forefront, I think, of being... accepting or even encouraging social change, I'm really proud of that, the way we've generally come down on, the way we've worked things out.
And I've noticed an outreach into the local community with the signs, for instance, on Wednesday meals, everyone is welcome. Please join us. And I've been a member here for many years. I was away for a period of time, but it's only when I've come back in the last few years that I've noticed those signs out on the lawn around.
Yeah.
And so that is a small symbol, but of the really increasing attempts to for outreach.
Yeah.
Is there anything you'd like to comment about? Favorite hymns or songs or the worship itself, the worship time?
Well, one thing we haven't talked about is the music at St. John's. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a blessing. That's probably something that's so easy to take for granted, I guess. But that's what's nice going to churches sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
What a deal. The whole congregation sings. That's wonderful. It's just kind of the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people they're so fortunate to have so many musical people that are involved in St. John's, the St. Olaf influence is a real blessing,
mm-hmm.
I think. So yeah, that's, but you know, the music, and one thing I didn't talk about earlier too is, I should have mentioned earlier, is the art that we have, arts in here. Like when I talked about being on these building committees, we also had like people like Ellie Lundblad and Jimmy Swanson and people that have really are artistic, and what a wonderful asset that is. I mean, because if you put me in charge of that, you probably don't like what you get. But you get some of those people involved. We're so fortunate to have them. So, I mean, the music and the arts and, is
really
something that needs to be recognized, I guess, and appreciated always. Oh, I remember way back, though, too, it's kind of funny, but, you know, there's always conflict. Or always conflict, like when you want to put a, needed a new organ. This is probably back in the 50s and 60s, somewhere when we got that, the one organ. I think it's just the one before this one. But, you know, there's a lot of the congregation says, oh, that's so much money, and it's, you know, that's, I know, people just got to have the music people, you know, got to spend all this money. And but, you know, we came through and we bought the organ, and it's, like I said, it's a blessing that we, there again, a blessing that we just came up with the funds to support and have a, support the music people, to give them the tools, the instruments that they need.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. Support their efforts and to enhance their skills.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're so lucky to have the connection with St. Olaf and to get their choir to come here every January and sing at our service. It's just amazing. I mean, nothing I like better than hearing beautiful Savior ringing through the rafters at the end
of
the service.
Yeah, and see, it's really good about it, because we don't lose track of some of the old favorite classics, but we don't just stick with that either. They kind of, you know, they'll send some stuff in there that's like, oh, this is hard to sing, but let's maybe try it, as far as the young. So, I think the music people do a real good job of eclectic or whatever.
Yeah, it's some old and some new. Is there anything else that you'd like to share about your experience at St. John's so far? Anything that you'd like to talk about that we haven't touched on?
No, again, it's just like I say, for me, actually, you know, the St. Olaf influence on me personally has been pretty big. I mean, I got out of college and drafted in the Army and got out of the Army. My first job, I came back here and I just actually applied for a job at St. Olaf, and I was just kind of the gopher in the biology department. I'd set up labs and order things and whatever. Harold Hansen was my boss, but that's where I got to know a lot of the professors in the science wing. You know, that's where I got to,
Gene Bacco.
Pardon? Gene Bacco. He was he was getting tenure. He was a new professor when I was there. And
Wes Pearson.
Oh yeah, Wes Pearson.
Dan Palm.
Pardon?
Dan
Palm. Dan. Jim Cederberg on the board with him.
Marley Manson.
Marley Manson.
And Al Finholt.
Yes, he was another person I could tell the story about, but it's
And many of those members of St. John's.
Oh yes. Yeah, and it's like, boy, of course, I suppose you knew. It's the first time I really got to know personally a college professor, I suppose, and it's like, the old notion that they're in an ivory tower and this and that's like, oh good lord, no, these are bigger people. Like Harold Hansen, he's a better carpenter than I was as far as working with his hands and stuff.
Yes.
Like, yeah, this is great. So
certainly John Walters, I would guess.
Oh, John, I was going to think of John. I was going to think, yes. But yeah, because they can go down. That's really neat to see that. I mean, I suppose you could think, the connection to St. Olaf kind of limits your diversity or something like that, but I think it does kind of the opposite, you know, it just kind of brings in new people or whatever. Because, well, you know, I was a farmer my whole life, you know, mostly, so I mean, it kind of gets you out of the farm community.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit too.
Anything else that I haven't asked you?
No, I'll think of that after the interview is over.
You can come back.
So, yeah.
All right.
Other than that, once this is I think a wonderful idea. I mean,
I think so too. You know, yeah.
Get some recollections of different people.
Sure.
Well, thank you, Joan and Vern, for sharing your story and your family's story as part of St. John's Lutheran Church sesquicentennial.